Hall & Wilcox acknowledges the traditional custodians of the lands on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to all First Nations people joining us today.
Welcome back to our Hall & Wilcox Spotlight and Construction podcast series, in which we discuss topics that affect the construction industry. Today, we continue our discussion of green construction, being sustainable and environmentally friendly construction practices with a specific focus on carbon emissions. My name is Sam Kelsey, and I'm a senior associate in the construction team at Hall & Wilcox. In our previous episode, we looked at carbon emissions from a developer's point of view. What are they? How are they measured? What can you do to reduce it? And why should you? In this episode, we're looking at carbon emissions from a contractor's perspective, answering the same questions. What are they? What can I do? I am joined again today by Julia Hallower, an associate at the Footprint Company who specialises in sustainability and carbon advisory, and who has over 8 years' experience advising companies on how to implement sustainability practices and strategies. Welcome, Julia. As with last week, Julia, let's maybe start off with perhaps an obvious, not so obvious question. What are carbon emissions if I'm a construction contractor? What are we talking about? What's my carbon emission here?
Hi, Sam. As discussed last week, the main source of carbon emission are from burning fossil fuel, such as natural gas, coal, oil, diesel, and others, but also indirect emissions from electricity, supply chain, and products and services that are created by a business. So for a contractor point of view, their emission will come from all of the fossil fuels that they burn directly. So for example, the diesel on the engine on site, as well as the one linked to their corporate offices. Same for electricity, linked to all the electricity use on the on site, but also as part of their corporate activities. But a very big chunk of their emission will be linked to the supply chain. So this is all of the material that they procure. And the way we account it, we look at how much energy is going into, for example, producing concrete or steel, how much carbon emission is associated with the transport of the material to the site, and how much emission is associated with end-of-life waste of this material as well. So this will be the biggest portion. There is linked to that, there is emission associated with all the construction waste and transport of all the materials in and out of the sites.
So I think by the sounds of it, the biggest chunk of the carbon emissions from the contractor process is all really sort of sits in the material supply chain, which is possibly the hardest bit for the contractor to change or have sort of a huge amount of influence over. So, you know, to the point of the direct carbon from a contractor, the diesel it puts in its trucks and the diesel generators it uses to run its site offices, those things, to my mind, are fairly easy for me as a contractor to say, well, I've got direct control over those. I can, you know, switch out my diesel truck for an electric truck, or I can switch out using a diesel generator on my site office. But if the biggest chunk of my carbon emissions is in my material supply chain, what can I sort of do as a contractor to have an influence on reducing the carbon emissions in that material supply chain?
Yeah, so it is important to measure carbon emission on projects, so before starting construction, so that can well inform design it for contractors that are involved in the design process as well. But it can also inform the procurement and selection of products and manufacturers. So for example, there are options that exist for concrete with lower carbon emissions. In concrete, most of the carbon emission come from cement. So that would be a higher percentage of recycled content to produce a cement, and that will reduce significantly the overall emission of concrete. So this exists and it's available for some products. There is no cost premium for high strength concrete. There is a bit of a premium that exists currently for the cost. Low carbon aluminium is available as well. More and more of the large manufacturers are looking at low carbon alternative.
So a lot of that seems to be sort of when you're choosing who you're going to get your concrete from, who you're going to get your steel from, who you're going to get aluminium from, have a look at the companies that themselves offer low carbon options, in the sense that they themselves have already taken steps to reduce the carbon emissions in the manufacturing of the product that you're buying. So sort of wise consumer decisions, it sort of sounds like to me. I think a little bit linked to that maybe is in Australia, we ship an awful lot of our materials in, an awful lot of our cement and steel comes from overseas in China. I mean, just conceptually to me, that has a huge carbon footprint to it, not least because of the ships used to bring them in. What can contractors do to look at the choice between continuing the practice of just shipping all materials from in overseas versus sourcing locally?
So there is more options for low carbon materials overseas. We see a lot coming from Europe, for example, or countries that have a lot of renewable energy in their grid. So that means that it just produce less carbon to produce a material in the first place. And for example, there are very low carbon steel that exists in Europe. But it is critical for Australia to develop a supply chain for these materials themselves. And, you know, we could see with COVID and the shortage of materials, the importance of having them locally. The carbon emission of shipping the material is not that high compared to producing the material itself.
Okay, interesting. But
it is still critical to develop a local supply chain if possible. So, for example, the steel industry in Australia is quite proactive in like identifying options to reduce carbon emission by reusing scrap, using electric arc furnace, or these kind of things to produce the steel. But the reason why it's important to still support the local economy is that even if the product doesn't exist, just by asking for it and showing that there is a demand for it, it will support manufacturers to develop it. So, for example, Lendlease in the Barangaroo Towers, they were looking at low-carbon aluminium. It wasn't available in Australia at the time, so they had three towers. They ask every time. First one, they couldn't make it. They had to purchase it from overseas. Second time, the same. But for the third tower, because they asked, I mean, not because just them.
Yeah.
because the demand has increased and people have been more vocal about the need of having low carbon aluminium, manufacturers starting to produce it in Australia. Okay. And they could use Australian low carbon aluminium for the last tower. So there are some really good stories showing that by just asking for it and showing that there is a demand for this type of product, there is a supply chain that can develop in Australia.
Yeah, that natural sort of gap that pops up within Australia, that we're not going to produce something in Australia that nobody wants to buy. But if everybody wants to buy it, somebody somewhere is going to go, well, I'll make that for you. I guess until that point happens, there's a bit of a, I would call it a mathematical calculation, I would suspect, where you look at, okay, I can purchase low carbon aluminium from Sweden, but I have to ship it in, weighing up what the benefit of buying the low carbon aluminium from Sweden and shipping it in versus buying non-low carbon here in Australia and not shipping it in. I suspect that sounds like there might be quite a fine line between the carbon benefits of those. It's interesting to hear you say that the carbon footprint for the shipping is not perhaps as big as necessarily somebody like me would think it is. I think that's one of the first things I thought of, well, you've got all these ships bringing it in, but I guess the ships are coming anyway. So, and we know that carbon reporting is coming. You know, a draft bill has come out recently, and this is something that, given Australia's commitment to reducing its carbon footprint versus its commitment to build more infrastructure and housing, this is something that I think is going to get a huge amount of focus in the next 5 and 10 years. So as a contractor, why should I start doing it now? What's the benefit to me? Why should I just not just sit back and wait for the government to point a finger at me and say, right, it's your turn to get involved now?
So the reporting, the first stage of the reporting focus on what's called scope 1 and 2, and that was a direct emission for the contractor. So that would typically be the fuel use on the construction sites. Mm-hmm. And it is challenging to get the supply chain ready for this in Australia. Mm-hmm. So in terms of procuring renewable diesel or switching to electric construction site equipment. So there is a need to start looking at it now, understanding what are the options, what can be done, and similarly, like, you know, raising that there is a need and there is a demand for it in Australia so that the supply chain can
be ready.
Be ready, exactly. And then there is the second stage of the reporting, which includes scope 3. And that definitely means looking at the world supply chain. And similarly, this is a long process. So there is no need to wait for this to become mandatory. So this is about looking at what are the largest materials procured on your construction sites and focusing on these ones first, because this is where there will be the highest savings. And engaging with the manufacturer and supply chain and discuss with them, you know, which options they have now, which options they're planning to have in the future, and how we can help them.
So I think that the two sort of takeaways I take from that is, one, it's always better to be ready, you know, get ahead of the curve, because this is not a thing that's going to change overnight. But also sounds like contractors could be a voice of change. You know, if the contractors start asking for these products, particularly to be locally made in Australia, then when it comes time for this being enforced upon everybody having to do it, we're going to be more ready by having sort of taken proactive steps now to get the supply chain ready for this. That's been fascinating. Thank you so much, Julia, for joining us today and sharing your insights on this. And thanks everyone for listening today. As always, you can get in touch with us if you have any questions. Our contact details are on our website, hornandwilcox.com.au, and you can connect with us or Julia on LinkedIn. If you've enjoyed today's episode, then rate, review, or follow our podcast wherever you get your podcast from. And thanks again for listening. Thank you, Julia.
This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.